about suffering in connection with the flood, of course, from all over the country. And undoubtedly, there is a lot of it going on. But these people down here seem to be a little different. They're the type of people that life hasn't held very much for. And it's certainly a pitiful scene to see them now as they're brought into these relief centers, cold and with insufficient clothing, and many of them have children, of course. It really is a pitiful scene. This afternoon, another member of WMC staff and myself, for instance, took out a mother and her five-day-old baby. They were located just about a quarter of a mile from this Big Lake levee about which I've spoken, and they were in imminent danger of being flooded. The father came into where we were located with our shortwave transmitter and asked if we could get in touch with the Red Cross authorities here at Blytheville and get them an ambulance. But facilities, of course, are taxed to their utmost, and in order to save time, we drove down there, put an extra seat in the back of the car, and the mother and this little baby were brought out in the wagon, about a mile and a half the house was from the road, brought out to the road in the wagon, and then we had to lift the whole bed and everything bodily into the back of the car and bring them into town. And those are the conditions that we're seeing every day. I don't mean to take an alarming attitude, because as a matter of fact, as far as danger to life and limb is concerned, the toll seems to be very moderate throughout the country, I would say, considering the conditions. But there is a lot of suffering, and we can't, of course, close our eyes to that fact. The Red Cross, incidentally, and the U.S. engineers are doing a magnificent piece of work, particularly throughout this territory, and of course that's the only thing that I'm able to speak about with any degree of accuracy. Their facilities are taxed to the utmost, and by the way, I might here repeat an announcement by Major Burdick of the U.S. engineers. It's addressed to people living in the Birch Point, New Madrid area floodway, which is just north of here and immediately south of the point where the Ohio River and the Mississippi converge. These people are warned to evacuate immediately. Now, this is very important. They're urged not to wait to collect their belongings, but simply to evacuate because there's immediate danger of this area being flooded. That is addressed to anybody who might be listening and who lives in the Birch Point, New Madrid area floodway. Many of the refugees in this section are being cared for in boxcars that the railroads have placed there for their use, and they've just pulled them along in switches, and these people have lit fires in them, and you can see these strings of boxcars pulled up alongside the highways. And as you go by, these little kids poke their faces out at you and wave, and it really is a sight that one couldn't very well forget very easily. The situation down here now, as far as additional floodwaters is concerned, is that the ditches and all the depressions in the ground, of course, are covered with surface water, so that should a thaw occur in the very near future, it won't be long before the floodwaters reach an alarming stage, because there's nowhere for them to go, of course. These stores down here in these small towns throughout this section are throwing their doors open to these refugees, and it's really, I can't pass this broadcast without saying a word in praise of the citizens of the towns in the immediate location or in the immediate vicinity of the flooded districts. They're all doing a fine piece of work, and it really is the sort of situation that compels respect and sort of rebuilds your faith in human nature. And now I see my time's about up. Immediately after this broadcast, Chief Engineer Clyde Baker and myself are going to pack up our shortwave equipment and go to Osceola and board a U.S. engineer's barge, where we hope to get into some of the flooded territory north of here that's inaccessible by road. This has been a Red Network presentation of the National Broadcasting Company. We return you now to Chicago.
The program regularly scheduled for this period will not be heard. In its place, we bring you a special flood broadcast. We take you now to Evansville, Indiana.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? Here's today's early report on the flood situation from Evansville, Indiana, the contact point on the raging Ohio River for Indiana, Kentucky, and southeastern Illinois. Half an hour ago, the official river level stood at 50.8 feet, with the crest still expected to reach well over 53 feet on conservative estimates. During the night, the hammering of carpenters rang through the air here on the riverfront as a battery of men worked incessantly building small, flat-bottom boats, temporary boats, to help relieve the shortage of such craft. They're being built on the snow on the lawn in front of the Elks' home, which is over a block from what is usually the riverfront, where many of the Coast Guard who had to evacuate from their first quarters are quartered now when they get a chance to be relieved. And speaking of relief, it is reported that many of the field crew on rescue work and the work of helping unload supplies are near collapse from exhaustion from the constant work over several days without rest. But otherwise, the situation is well in hand. There's a good supply of big river boats and barges for handling the moving of food and clothing to outlying stricken areas. The hardest job is to get supplies loaded onto the barges because the waters of the Ohio are licking their way into riverfront streets. Work has now started on a temporary dock to facilitate the movement of supplies to the riverfront and onto the barges. This ramp must be built fast before the new Evansville seawall is completely covered so that mooring posts for the big paddle wheel steamers may be placed for them to tie onto. The water is just inches from the top of the wall now, which we can see from the vantage point from where we're speaking. And now here's a late report. 600 flood refugees from Shawneetown, Kentucky, are aboard the Patricia Barrett, one of the riverboats, and will soon be on their way across the waters to Henderson, Kentucky, which is about 10 miles down the river from here, and Mount Vernon, Indiana. Shawneetown, completely surrounded by water for a few days, is now completely evacuated, and of course is underwater since the levee went out. The new weather report is not available here officially, but the sky right now looking out is heavily overcast this gray, murky morning. No rain is falling yet, and the temperature stands at freezing 32 degrees. And now for a few facts concerning supplies hereabout, the most important factor in relief work, since there's little evacuating being done now. There is an adequate food supply for about 2 weeks, with more on its way into Evansville. Gasoline, of course, is a big item on the running of rescue boats, and 250,000 gallons are on hand and accessible immediately in stations not underwater. The milk supply is fairly good, and three roads are open into Evansville from points in Vandenberg County to bring in milk and other supplies. We've been asked to make it clear to those outside the flood area that railroad transportation to the west and to the north of Evansville is open, and trains running on a fairly even schedule. The coal supply in Evansville is very short, but there's an open mine in this country, in this county down here, in Vandenberg County, producing 800 tons a day, and it's being worked 24 hours per day. Martial law is in effect in the Ohio, in the entire Indiana flooded area, starting this morning, as we flashed from here last night. Colonel Louis Roberts is in charge and is coordinating his men with the activities of the Red Cross and the U.S. Engineers. This is a precautionary measure. The decision to place this territory under martial law was set up in the governor's office yesterday afternoon, but word was not received here until late yesterday. And that just about concludes our little time allotted us down here in Evansville for this early morning shot, but we'll be with you later in the day, so listen for us, and now we return you to Louisville.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is WAVE reporting on the flood situation from Louisville. Last evening at 11:39 p.m., WAVE was forced to leave the air due to power failure in Louisville. This greatly handicapped flood rescue work here in this vicinity, as we were reporting pickups and instructions to radio-equipped motorboats, powerboats, trucks, and automobiles. After the power failure, by means of candlelit studios, the NBC network telephone line from Louisville to Cincinnati, and the assistance of the Nation station, we were able, intermittently, to give our instructions over station WLW to rescue workers in this territory. The temperature in Louisville this morning is 33 degrees Fahrenheit. The temperature remains the same as yesterday here. We are glad to report there has been no rain since last night at 9:30. Mr. Kendall, the United States official weather forecaster for this section, reports warmer weather and probably more rain. But he further says the barometer is rising gradually, and that would indicate it might clear up. The general forecast for the Ohio Valley is probably rain and warmer. The stage of the river this morning is 54.8 feet. This was the 6 o'clock reading this morning from the United States Engineer's Office located at Dam 41. There has been a steady rise of 0.1 foot per hour at Louisville. The crest here is expected Wednesday, barring all rains. It is expected to reach 57 or 58 feet. This is a bit, and I might add, our first bit of good news, as it were. As we have said, our electric power from the Louisville Gas and Electric Company is gone. Mr. Skeets Miller of the National Broadcasting Company notified WAVE early this morning that a generator was on its way by airplane from Chicago and would be in Louisville sometime this morning, weather conditions permitting. This would permit us to then carry on our broadcast of instructions to radio-equipped flood relief workers until our generator is set up by engineers of WAVE. We hope to continue using the facilities of WLW for broadcasts to the relief workers. The electric power in Louisville will be off at least another 5 or 6 days. The relief work is getting along nicely. All theaters, dance halls, churches, and other vacant places are full of refugees. All agencies of relief are responding well. This is Bill Bond speaking. This concludes the flood report from this vicinity. It came to you from station WAVE through the Blue Network of the National Broadcasting Company. We take you now to Cincinnati.
Continuing its determined climb to almost unbelievable heights, the raging Ohio River touched 78.7 feet at Cincinnati a few minutes ago. 78 feet and 7 tenths. And there's no assurance that it will not continue on its climb until the gauge registers 80 feet. The oil fires, which have been menacing a large section of Cincinnati since yesterday morning, died out shortly after midnight. But about 4 o'clock, the flames broke out anew, and at this moment are again threatening to spread further destruction and add to the horror of the flood. Additional fire apparatus has been rushed to the scene and is now waging a determined fight to hold in check several thousand gallons of flaming gasoline, which is sweeping over the floodwaters near the Crosley Radio Company studios and plant in the Cumminsville section of the city. As yet, there has been no loss of life in the greater Cincinnati district, which includes Newport, Covington, and several northern Kentucky cities adjacent to Cincinnati. Early this morning, 2 vacant buildings in the east end section of Newport collapsed. Business in this section is practically at a standstill. Banks and only such business organizations as are engaged in actual production for food relief are operating. The citizens have responded to the call of City Manager Dykstra, and these efforts to conserve the necessities and to curtail use of electric power have enabled the utility companies to maintain both gas and electric service. Only in certain isolated sections has the gas been completely shut off, and that was due to purely localized trouble with the distribution system. Most of the homes in the suburban districts burned but one electric light during the night, with thousands sitting huddled about in the dark, listening to their radios, the only means available for the transmission of city regulations. The suspension bridge, which spans the river connecting Cincinnati and Covington, Kentucky, has been reopened for emergency traffic only. It had been closed during the night to permit engineers to build emergency dikes to keep both the Ohio and Kentucky approaches free of water. The entire flooded territory in Cincinnati has been absolutely free of looting. Food, clothing, and medical supplies are reaching the Red Cross in rapidly increasing quantities. And this morning it was stated there was no immediate danger of a serious food shortage. The prospect of colder weather, which is predicted for the next 2 or 3 days, is expected to increase the demand for coal. This, relief officials say, will undoubtedly cause a serious shortage of coal if the emergency continues more than a week. All banks are open today. Restaurants are operating in the downtown section. The water supply is shut off at stated intervals during the day, but this apparently is not resulting in hardship to the people. All liquor stores have been closed, and the sale of hard liquor in cafes and restaurants absolutely banned. Red Cross officials estimate 65,000 persons are homeless in the greater Cincinnati territory. Approximately 16 square miles of Cincinnati are inundated by the floodwaters. Most conservative estimates place the property damage at $7 million. This total is, of course, increasing hourly as the floodwaters reach heretofore untouched sections of the city. Ohio's Governor Martin L. Davey is expected in Cincinnati within the hour for a personal survey of the flood situation. An interesting note is this one. The Coast Guard boat sent here from Asbury Park, New Jersey, and now being used to evacuate those persons threatened are the same lifeboats which were used in the Morro Castle ship disaster a few years ago. And these boats are manned by the very same crews. And now I should like to make this appeal to the nation. Please do not telephone or telegraph WLW for information regarding your relatives or friends in this territory. There have been no casualties. Our flood refugees are being cared for and up to this minute have suffered comparatively little. The facilities of WLW have been placed at the disposal of the relief agencies and are being taxed to the utmost under the emergency conditions. Please rest assured your friends and relatives are absolutely secure. Should this situation change at any time, this station will be on the air immediately with full and complete details. That concludes WLW's part in this flood broadcast. We take you now to Memphis.
This broadcast is coming to you direct from the editorial rooms of the Commercial Appeal. Evacuation of Paducah, Kentucky, a town of 34,000, is underway. The town was without lights, communications last night. Today, the citizens are being removed to safety via motorboats to Mayfield, Kentucky, and other points. At Cairo, Illinois, in the Memphis Engineering District, reports were received that three small gaps had been created in the upper end of the fuse plug of the Bird's Point, New Madrid fuse plug. Engineers flanked by National Guardsmen will dynamite the area this morning to save the city of Cairo, Illinois. The mayor of Cairo has ordered all women and children to leave the city as a precautionary measure.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we have a little girl here, about 9 years of age, I should judge. Just as fresh and sweet-looking a little girl as I've ever seen, though she hasn't had much sleep during the past 24 hours. She's one of the many refugees who are coming into Memphis at the present time. This particular little girl is a little freckled-faced.
Wait a minute. I don't have freckles across my nose.
Well, you've got plenty of them. Well, ladies and gentlemen, nevertheless, here she is, freckled or non-freckled. What is your name, little girl?
Gina
Marilis Wims. Gina Marilis Wims. And how old are you?
9 years old.
9 years old. Where is your home, Gina?
Widener, Arkansas.
Widener, Arkansas. When did you leave Widener?
Yesterday afternoon, about 3:30.
Mm-hmm. And did you get any sleep since you left home?
Not much, because I couldn't sleep on those benches at the train station.
You couldn't sleep on the benches in the train station? Well, you're a pretty wide-awake little girl for not having had any sleep to speak of at all within the past 24 hours.
But I got eyes on my eyelids.
You've got what on your eyelids?
Eyes.
I don't see any ice on your eyelids.
I mean they're heavy.
Oh, you mean your eyelids are heavy and you really are getting sleepy. Well, we're going to let you go to sleep just as soon as this interview is over. Why did you leave your home at Widener, Jean?
We read in a commercial field that the water was rising and the levee might break any time. So we took the commercial field to buy some lamps.
I see. Well, that's fine, Jean. Did you come with your father and mother?
I came with my mother. My father brought us to the station. Mother, my brother and sister and I are going to Mississippi.
Did you come by train?
No, so Daddy brought us in our car to Memphis.
I see. Daddy brought you to Memphis in your car. By the way, Jean, did the floodwaters scare you when you saw them?
Not much, but it scared me when Daddy told the niggas that it didn't work, and when the flood came and the water began pouring in the ears, and I come to him for help.
Did you manage to pack all of your belongings away before you left home?
You bet. I packed all the ones I love best.
And which were the ones that you loved best, Jean?
All the ones I've passed along, like my piano, my doll band, my six dolls, that 8 years old, and my...
You're sure that you've got them all safely packed away?
You bet. I tore a plank out of the loft and put them in the loft.
Well, when are you going back to Widener and get your doll and your doll bed and all the rest of your belongings?
When the water gets down so we can go back.
And we hope that'll be soon, don't we?
Yes, sir.
By the way, did you get plenty to eat in the last 24 hours or so? You're not suffering from starvation or anything.
You bet. I'm full.
You're full. When did you have breakfast?
This morning about 3 o'clock.
This morning about 3 o'clock.
I got hungry and made Mother go buy me something.
Do you know anything at all, Gene, about the conditions at or near Widener? Is there any suffering going on there at the present time? Do people need food and clothing and bedding and shelter?
I don't know, but I've heard of lots of things there. Dr. Winters, our family doctor, has lots of cases at Widener.
Well, that's fine, Gene. Thank you very, very much. You talk as though you're a veteran out on the air. Have you ever been on the air before? You ever talked in front of a microphone?
One time.
You did. Well, you are a real veteran. Thank you very much, Gene. And ladies and gentlemen, I believe our time is up now. This broadcast has come to you from the editorial rooms of the South's greatest newspaper, The Commercial Appeal, through the facilities of station WMC at Memphis.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and greetings from Portsmouth, Ohio. When we spoke to you over the NBC network last night, the river rise was 70.56. And as we told you, it was rising at the rate of 1/10 foot per hour. So this morning, I checked up with the Highway Patrol a few moments ago. The figures are 71 and 31. The snow has been washed away. The temperature this morning, about 32 degrees. We're forced to speak to you this morning from the north side of Portsmouth, which is known as Hilltop. The refugees from the flooded area, which is the lower part of Portsmouth, have all migrated now and are on Hilltop. The report from the State Highway Patrol this morning is that enough food is at Lincoln High School and an emergency hospital and the several other places that are housing the refugees, and throughout the day they will at least have a limited amount of food. We are told by the Highway Patrol, Colonel Lynn Black, that sometime throughout the day, approximately 20 nurses and several additional doctors will fight their way through the floodwaters and arrive here at Portsmouth. There is no epidemic of any kind breaking out as yet. The rate of pneumonia cases are surprisingly low. We're happy to tell you this morning that the NBC mobile unit number 5 will perhaps be utilized today and manned by Alvin McMahon and Frank Whittem in the assistance of rescue work. The radio station, Mac, what is the call letters? WPAY have been doing yeoman work. That's one of the small stations of the country operating here out of Portsmouth. And the work that they have been able to accomplish with the police department has helped in a large way in rescuing all of the persons over in the flooded area. Last night, one of the large tubes of the radio went out, but this morning, the NBC mobile unit will be put into working order sometime throughout the day to assist the police. All orders for persons to evacuate are becoming more strenuous from the order of Lynn Black, and the people on the second floor that have gone into the attics were rescued early this morning. The water is rising at the rate of 1/10 foot per hour, and they're just going to have to get out. You know, a lot of the folks last night that we came in contact with while making a trip up through town said they did not want to leave their home, that they wanted to ride the flood out. There's a certain amount of pride in doing that. Others said that they didn't want to leave their home and come over into the crowded school buildings and so forth. They would rather sit over there and watch the flood waters. But they're coming up now. We've noticed that the billboards that we saw last night are completely inundated. But I believe before the day is over that there will another additional carload of food and medicine will be gotten in to Portsmouth. But everything is going along fine. People are still taking it nonchalant. There is no rain at the moment, and the temperature is 32 degrees. We take you now to Pittsburgh.
Threats of another flood hang over Pittsburgh this morning as the Allegheny and Monongahela rivers begin to rise. The new rise in the water comes as a result of rain which fell at the headwaters of these rivers last night. Previous to this rain, the rivers had fallen to 28 feet in Pittsburgh. Then both rivers started their new climb. At 8 o'clock this morning, waters at the junction of the Allegheny and the Monongahela, which, by the way, is the origin of the Ohio River, was just below the 30-foot mark, 5 feet above stage where property damage begins. Just how high the new rise will go depends upon the amount of rainfall in the western Pennsylvania watershed. Federal forecaster Brotzman in Pittsburgh expects the rivers to go over the 30-foot mark later today. Grateful for the recession of the waters early Saturday, Pittsburgh was contributing aid yesterday to the stricken downriver communities. Mayor Scully led the public appeal for a $150,000 contribution to assist the Red Cross work. He asked Pittsburgh's cooperation after conferences with the Red Cross, reminding the citizens here of the aid given by the Red Cross last year during the St. Patrick's Day disaster. The Red Cross sent 1,500 additional blankets to Cincinnati last night. Headquarters are being maintained to receive donations of food, bed, clothing, and other supplies, which are being sent downriver as rapidly as they come in. Emergency shelters set up for the hundreds driven from their homes in Sharpsburg, McKees Rocks, and the north side in Pittsburgh, the hardest hit sections, were almost deserted yesterday. Clinging to their homes, the refugees had gone back to clean out the dirt and debris left by the muddy waters. Many already had fires started and an air of comfort restored by an early hour last night. Streets were being cleaned up as the riverside inhabitants looked forward apprehensively to the new deluge. Pumps labored creakingly outside several downtown buildings where cellars had caught the overflow. Extra police and the deputy sheriffs held themselves in readiness for a call to duty, but no disorder has been reported. We want to emphasize at this time that the flood crest reached in Pittsburgh last Friday, a crest of approximately 33 feet, was, as you probably know, in no way comparable to the crest of 46 feet, which occurred in Pittsburgh last St. Patrick's Day. However, as we emphasized before this broadcast, our flood stage is 25 feet, and at the present time, the rivers stand at approximately 30 feet, 5 feet above the level where property damage begins. How high this new rise in the Allegheny and Monongahela and the origin of the Ohio River will go depends entirely upon the amount of water falling in the watersheds north of Pittsburgh. Our weather forecast for today is cloudy and colder, with fair and cold tomorrow. So what's going to happen, we know not. But that is the picture of the flood situation in Pittsburgh. We take you now to New York.
The Red Cross has requested us to make the following announcement. Anyone with a truck and available driver living in the territory adjacent to the stricken flood zone is urged to report for service to the nearest Red Cross headquarters. An immediate problem being experienced in the relief work is the piling up of supplies that, for lack of transportation and drivers, cannot be sent further into the stricken areas. And now the National Broadcasting Company repeats a special flood roundup from the Press Radio Bureau. President Roosevelt kept his private telephone open all last night, receiving telephone calls for federal aid from the stricken flood areas. The president has ordered 35,000 WPA workers to emergency flood duty along the 1,800 miles of raging rivers. The WPA Army will aid in evacuating thousands from cities and towns in the Ohio and Mississippi River valleys, and also will be on guard duty at food stations. This emergency army also will build refugee camps and aid state and federal health authorities who are fighting the spread of contagious diseases. WPA Administrator Hopkins says that 100,000 mattresses and comforters, which were made on WPA women's projects, have been ordered sent to the flood areas, and that 300 boats have been borrowed for their delivery. Federal health authorities are taking over control of the available water supplies in Louisville, Portsmouth, and other points in Ohio, and will chlorinate all drinking water before it is used. This precaution is being taken to prevent the spread of disease. There is assurance this morning that food supplies will be rapidly moved into the flooded cities and towns which are destitute. The United States Navy is sending vessels from the Navy Yards at Philadelphia and Norfolk, West Virginia, to the stricken area. These vessels, in addition to some 150 Coast Guard boats, will deliver beef, eggs, and canned milk to the stricken cities. The supplies are owned by the government's Commodities Surplus Corporation and have been released by President Roosevelt. To provide money for the destitute, WPA Administrator Hopkins said he will open the nation's relief rolls to victims of the flood. The government has lifted all rules and regulations in the emergency, and he promised that all the money necessary will be provided by the government. The Coast Guard is moving ships up the Mississippi to the Louisville and Cincinnati areas. These boats are loaded with medicine, blankets, and other emergency supplies. Altogether, 72 rescue vessels of the Coast Guard are now operating in the stricken area. President Roosevelt has arranged for two conferences daily at the White House with Red Cross officials and is in personal communication with officials at Cincinnati. And to supplement the work of the WPA Army, 12,000 CCC workers are now on duty in the flood zones. The Red Cross in Washington estimates that some 350,000 persons are homeless in the 11 states that are flooded. The total damage is expected to go beyond the high mark of $300 million last year. Under the protection of armed National Guardsmen, United States Army engineers were prepared this morning to dynamite the Ohio River levee below Cairo, Illinois, in order to save that city. Up to now, Cairo has escaped heavy damage under protection of a flood wall. The guardsmen are necessary because farmers have prevented the opening of the levee so far by threatening to shoot the engineers. The National Guardsmen will be under the direction of Lieutenant Colonel Eugene Ray Bulk of the United States Regular Army. 7 Coast Guard amphibian planes which were ordered to flood duty have been unable to reach the stricken area because of rain, fog, and other bad weather. The Coast Guard also is sending a number of portable radio stations to various cities in order to restore communications where none now exist. 2 Coast Guard portable stations already are operating, and 4 more will be set up immediately. The biggest problem is transporting food and supplies to small communities, according to Admiral Carrie T. Grayson, chairman of the American Red Cross. The Admiral has a fleet of outboard motorboats numbering 100 at anchor in Evansville, Indiana, and these will be used in reaching the small communities, he said. Altogether, 120 emergency stations have been opened by the Red Cross. Each of these stations will begin immediately to buy whatever clothing and food stuff is necessary. This news is from the Press Radio Bureau and is based on the latest reports of the Associated Press, the United Press, and Universal Service. The Press Radio Bureau operates as a public service to radio listeners by the newspapers in cooperation with the broadcasters.